Welcome to this podcast from The Clinical Teacher. I'm joined by Terry Turner, who is just south of Houston. Hello, Terry.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
Very well indeed. Now, I must apologise to our listeners. I am on a very bad satellite internet connection here, and there will be a bit of a delay in Terry's responses. But I hope we'll have an interesting discussion, because I must say the paper that you've got in December 2012 issue of The Clinical Teacher is very exciting. It's about work you've done as a community of practice of clinical teachers there in Texas that have led to some really interesting insights. Can you just explain a little bit about the work you've done and the community of practice that you established?
Well, one of the things that we did is, as a group of educators that were interested in learning more, we decided to get together. And first of all, we just wanted to share our knowledge with other educators within our department. So we sat down and kind of discussed what we thought would be good for our educators, the clinician educators in our department, to know about. And that was kind of our first step as we got together. We subsequently have, as a group, have done a lot of things together, such as we teach each other when we learn about new things. We also get together and work on projects. We also have social events. It's more of sharing ideas, beliefs, and taking that knowledge that we've learned and giving back to our own community in our department.
Mm-hmm. Great. And one of the very practical outcomes of that is that I think you had a sort of a seminar series or a conference series, which then led to the development of the handbook, which is available online freely to anybody that wants to access it. That's a really solid outcome, but it also sounds like you did develop some networks, some interpersonal connections as well, which have been useful.
Yes, and one of the things that we have strived to do is within our community, we're a group of four, but one of the things that we do is every year or so we add a new person to the community, and as we take that person into the community during that period of time, we try to grow them also as an educator and then send them out after their time for them to develop their own community. So we have another group that is formed from this, and another group that will be starting soon.
Mm-hmm. So great. So it's really very supportive and encouraging of developing educators. It also, and within the paper there is something which I found really interesting about placing the teaching side of clinical practice alongside the research side in terms of its academic or scholarly recognition. This sounds really important in a way of building careers for people who teach academically.
Yes, it is. And one of the things that we've done with our own experiences is to try to teach others how to transform what they do on a day-to-day basis into scholarship, and how they can, we all do things in education, and if there are ways to make it scholarly, and then share that with other groups, with the world at large, we all can grow on the knowledge that we've gained.
It's certainly a conversation you have a lot with clinicians who say, oh, look, I can't research, I can't develop teaching or do teaching, I'm so busy clinically. But it sounds like your approach has been more about making those things happen alongside the clinical work so that it's less of an effort to do new work. It's just actually making what you're currently doing scholarly.
That is correct. We really try to push that idea that, you know, if you are a cardiologist, you have a lot of skills that you do on a daily basis, but teaching others about how to read EKGs and creating innovative tools, whether that is pocket cards or online modules of the information that you already do, can be transformed into scholarship by taking the evidence in medical education and applying to that through that scholarly approach. So it's almost like getting double duty for the same activity.
Which makes a lot of sense indeed. And in fact, you used a very structured approach to transforming teaching into scholarship. Can you tell us a little bit about that model that you used?
This is a model that was first introduced to me at the AAMC, and Hafler had described it. We're really the first step. You literally write down all of the educational activities you do. So when we teach this in a workshop, we have the participants write down everything that they can think of. Then in the second column, we have them think about what they know about the practice of medical education, what they've learned, and how can they take and apply that to whether they're doing a lecture or whether they're already teaching at the bedside, and how can they make that scholarly. And then finally, we really encourage them, how can they share that with their peers and with the public so that others can build upon that? And this can work, for example, if they even take pictures in their clinical setting, that those, if they take that and approach that with clinical cases and write a vignette around that, and then use that vignette in their teaching, that they could submit that to MedEd Portal as a form of scholarship so that others can use it and you're not reinventing the wheel.
And then they can also be credited for that as a valid academic activity or scholarly activity.
That is correct.
But I was interested that your group came up with a list of titles for the teaching activities you wanted to support each other in, and then that became the chapters in your handbook. And it does seem to cover the full range of professional development activities that a clinical teacher should consider, everything from bedside teaching through to the lecture, effective use of audiovisual support, blueprinting, inpatient ambulatory teaching. There's certainly everything there. That handbook is freely available, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And that was a big premise that we wanted to do, is we wanted to make it freely available. The other thing that was very important to us is that it was written with the clinician in mind, so that they didn't have to read it from cover to cover, because we knew that people didn't have a lot of time. We also had heard that sometimes it was hard to read either educational journals or sometimes books that were written with the more of an educational bent. They needed something that was very practical. And so this was very important that we put it in that language, that it was easy to read, easy to access. And most importantly, in the Houston area, we have a breadth and depth of different cultures and different individuals, that we wanted to make sure that it was freely available to anyone that wanted to access it, no matter where they were in the world.
And I think you really have hit upon the three main factors in having clinicians look into this. You've made the handbook very concise, very practical, and free. So it's very hard to argue with that. How's the feedback going? Are you getting good feedback from people that are using the handbook around the world?
We are, and one of the things that really makes me feel good is we had someone from Mexico that contacted us via email and just said thank you that this was made available free, because they had the ability to share with their preceptors and they had limited resources, and this was such a wonderful gift for them. And that's really why we did that.
Well, that's great. So apart from the gift of the handbook to the clinical teaching community, what have you gained from the experience of setting up a community and developing this program and then converting it into a scholarly handbook on teaching? What do you think you've gained yourself as a teacher through that process?
I I think I've gained not only a greater appreciation on how to teach this material, particularly it really helped me in developing the workshop for transforming teaching into scholarship by trying to make it very practical for busy clinicians. I think that's the thing that has been so valuable is how can I teach this for busy clinicians? The other thing is education. I didn't want education to just stop with a book. We wanted to grow educators. So one of the things that also has been nice is when you hear about other people who have developed, who have used the techniques and developed their skills, what you're really doing is growing the field. And that's what you want to do is to grow upon that field and grow educators and let them even create better works themselves.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. Well, thank you very much indeed for talking today. And I do apologize again to our listeners for the quality of the recording. But I couldn't resist the opportunity to talk with you, Terry. I think it's a wonderful thing that you've created, and I'm certainly getting a lot of use out of it in my work in Melbourne. And I would commend it to everybody to have a read of Terry and her colleague's article in The Clinical Teacher, and then to access the handbook and to use it in their work. So thank you again for joining me, Terry.
Well, thank you so very much for having me on here.